Putting your beliefs into action. Next on Principles and Policies. Welcome to today's Principles and Policies broadcast. This is your host, Barry Sheets, the Executive Director of the Institute for Principle and Policy. And along with me today, as usual, is our co-host, the Vice Chairman of our Institute, my good friend and fellow analyst, Chuck Michaels.
And I'm glad to be back here in the studio. It's been a busy week, but I always get a little more energized when we got issues like this to talk about.
Well, energized is a euphemism for frustrated and angry. Yes, I can join you in that. Ladies and gentlemen, if you've been with us over the last few days, you know that we've started talking about the effort that some members in the Ohio House of Representatives have undertaken to destroy our form of government. As we've said before, they're not intentionally trying to do this. Matter of fact, they think they're doing something good. They think they're trying to get a handle on and reasserting the states as a partner in and a check on the federal government in relation to runaway debt expenditures. They're doing it through a mechanism called House Joint Resolution 3, but that mechanism that they're using to express the sovereignty of the states can end up destroying not just the state's sovereignty, but our way of government as we know it. They're calling for an Article 5, what they call an amendments convention. And we've talked about a little bit about this if you were with us the last couple of days. But what we want to talk about today, and we have a special guest on today, is putting your beliefs into action and how it can be very effective when you marshal your facts. Our guest today is Robert Owens, who is an attorney from Delaware, Ohio. He has also been involved politically for a number of years. And for some of you may realize he ran in the 2010 election cycle on the ballot for attorney general. Robert, welcome to Principles and Policies, and thank you for joining us.
Thanks for having me on.
Well, we're glad to have you, Robert. Now, this hearing came up, as we've talked about with our listeners before, a little suddenly, but you were able to rearrange your schedule, and you and your wife, Terry, who I hope will be able to get on here at some later point, were able to get down to the State House with very short notice and give a cogent apology for why it's a dangerous thing for our state legislators to be handing over the reins of our Constitution through the means of an Article 5 convention. You want to tell us a little bit about that?
Well, sure, Barry. First of all, you know, it wasn't even me rearranging my schedule. This was God's providence in a way. Had an important hearing set for the afternoon, and just that morning it had been continued and rescheduled, so had the afternoon suddenly open, and shortly after that I get the email alert on my phone, and I see this, and this hearing's going to happen. So, you know, my wife and I were talking about where we're going to plant, or how we're going to build and plant in our raised garden, and we thought, all right, well, now it's time to take care of this issue. So literally hopped in the car, jeans and T-shirts and stuff that's more appropriate for gardening than testifying at the State House. Rushed down to the State House, was able to get there in time. Fortunately, we've been there before, so we knew exactly what room to go to and how to get there. Immediately located the forms to give testimony, got them filled out and turned into the clerk. Oh, probably about 4 minutes before the hearing started. So that got us on the official docket for giving testimony. And, you know, as it happened, even though this was set near the end of the agenda, the hearing was called to order, and they said, well, we're going to go right to this issue first. And at that point, a former state legislator from Arizona by the name of Gray was there to testify on behalf of RestoringFreedom.org to essentially give a rosy picture of an Article 5 con, that it could be, you know, stopped at any time, that it could be limited to one issue, and that, you know, our fiscal, you know, situation is so bad in Congress that we have to take action to restore some power to state sovereignty. So as he was sort of laying out his plan, my wife and I just sort of exchanged notes as to who would take what, and we decided she would handle the, hey, this is why ConCon is so bad and so dangerous, and I took the, hey, you know, even if you were successful in limiting it to one issue, it wouldn't do you any good anyway, and and there's other ways to achieve the same goal. So the guy, Gray, gets done. Then Chairman Mag says, all right, is there anybody here to testify otherwise for or against Issue 3? And as I'm raising my hand, the clerk is sort of tapping him on the shoulder and handing him the paper, and he calls my name and he calls Terry up to go first. She lays out the reasons why a constitutional convention is would be such a bad idea, that it has the potential to be a runaway. It has the potential to scrap our entire system. It has with it a history in which the Ford Foundation has put hundreds of millions of dollars into creating the next system that will be put forward. And the ratification procedure cannot be relied upon because the precedent is that it can be ratified however they want. And that a constitutional convention, essentially within that convention, they are a sovereign body and they can really do what they want and they cannot be recalled or stopped. Once they're set in motion, that's it.
Hey, Robert, I'm really glad that she made that point because that's a point we've been making at the Institute for Principled Policy for, in the last 18 months. And when we give that information to people, a lot of times we get looked at cross-eyed. Everybody's sort of like, huh, what do you mean? It's an individual. What do you mean they're not beholden to a legislature? What do you mean they're not beholden to lawmakers? Well, we've been explaining that a convention is a higher lawmaking body than a legislature by the very nature of the convention, because they are the direct representatives of the governed in writing law that lawmakers must obey.
Well, and you know, the bottom line is, I think at best, they could make the counter-argument, well, we just don't know for sure. And the thing is that that's a sword that cuts both ways, because that's the bottom line, is since this hasn't been used, there's no legal precedent. But what's likely to happen if they do start a runaway, you know, the only real check to that maybe, and even that's not clear, would be the Supreme Court, who could at that point just very well say it's a political issue and we're not going to do anything about it.
The one problem you've got there is that the convention has the power to eliminate the courts.
Entirely.
Yeah, so the bottom line is they're opening a Pandora's box that nobody can really say how big or deep or filled with issues it might be.
Oh, absolutely.
And so then I think it's important to point out then that, all right, so that's a bad idea, but we can't just gripe about that isn't the solution. We got to come up with counter proposals that would accomplish the same thing. So I think this is really in my testimony where I scored the most points, because there were certain members of the committee that, I mean, that's right. They don't want to hear about people just complaining and being naysayers. You know, if you've got a problem with something, then offer a reasonable alternative, because we all agree that the spending in Congress is out of control and it has to be dealt with. And so we pointed out, look, there are ways in which the states can reclaim their sovereignty. And I suggested, for example, the escrow bill put forward by a representative, Charles Key in Oklahoma, that says, hey, look, you know, Ohio taxpayers, don't send your federal money to Washington, send it to Columbus, care of the Ohio treasurer, we'll escrow it. A bunch of really conservative legislators will determine what money is owed under Article 1, Section 8 to the federal government. They'll forward that portion of what they've collected to the federal government and proportionally refund the balance to the citizens of Ohio.
Well, actually, there was one of those in Ohio last session. Yeah.
And Robert, I do believe it was your state senator who introduced it when he was in the House.
Yeah, well, and I'd put him up to it.
this is more of an example, ladies and gentlemen, of what you can really get accomplished if you set your mind to it and just start educating yourself and then talking to people from a position of information. Because, Robert, that's what you guys do. You guys inform people, you educate people on what's going on, and you encourage people to get engaged and get involved in the game. Because, honestly, if we don't get people to these hearings, and we don't have people calling their elected officials or seeing them when they go back in the district, whether it's at some, you know, coffee event or elbow shaking, or even if it's a party function, if they're not hearing from the constituencies that people are concerned about the direction they're taking, especially on an issue as contentious and fraught with danger as a constitutional convention call, they just go ahead and vote along with the caucus or with their colleagues. And in this case, Robert, as you know, and our listeners, I think, finding out, this is a special case because the sponsor of the resolution is also the chairman of the committee it's being heard in. Ron Magg is both. He's the chairman and the key sponsor of the bill. So there's going to be a tendency for his members in his own Republican caucus to want to vote with the chairman.
Robert, what is the status? How was it left when all was said and done at the end of the day?
Well, everything that was there that day was set for a vote, including this issue. And everything else got voted on and passed through committee except for this. The vote was not held on this. So what's next is for us to fully rally support on our way down, and even during the hearing on my iPhone, texting and emailing, you know, our various members of the John Birch Society all over the state. And, you know, I do believe, certainly with the response that I got, that we probably had somewhere between 50 and 100 calls into their offices within an hour and a half of my starting that process. And I'm sure for these guys, you know, once you get past 20 or 25 calls, it probably seems like a major forest fire.
Hopefully it seems like a forest fire. One problem that I see, they desperately want this issue not so much to actually get a constitutional convention to balance the budget, but to use as a campaign tool. This being an election year, they desperately want to try to get some traction with this as a campaign tool. And that seems to be the problem that I'm seeing. They don't really take the convention part seriously. What they take seriously is making traction against the other party.
Well, and I'm not saying that isn't true. It could very well be. But Barry, correct me if I'm wrong. It seems like this issue is so arcane that if they tried to use this as the issue, it means that they are so out of ideas, so bankrupt of thought, that they've got nothing else to dig out of the barrel other than this. And boy, I mean, that's going to be a real hard sell. I mean, most people have no clue what the heck this is.
Well, Robert, I think you've hit on it fairly well there. The big problem is that it isn't just that the general public really wouldn't grasp this. We're finding very clearly that most of the legislators who are supporting it and who probably are co-sponsors don't grasp the implications of what they're doing. The philosopher George Santayana said, if you do not learn from history, you are doomed to repeat it. These guys are not even reading history. The key is, we only have one other precedent in this entire the history of this country on how a convention is run, and we know what happened there. We know that the delegates broke with their sending colonies and went beyond what they were restricted to do. They voted to make everything secret, and then they voted to throw off the current governing document of the land, the Articles of Confederation, and start totally all over again, and then ratify the new document with the ratification procedures in the new document, which honestly is kind of one of those things like, well, wait a minute, how can you do that if the document's not ratified? How can you ratify it with the ratification procedure from the unratified document?
Well, we've explained that.
And we have to everybody.
In fact, these are some of the questions that Chuck Gray, who's the former
senator from Arizona.
Right. He was the former majority leader in the Arizona Senate. Basically said that the Goldwater Institute had written papers that answered, quote unquote, all the questions. We've asked several more that the Goldwater Institute has done nothing to even take a stab at, because they know they can't answer them. That's one of them. The fact is, we have this precedent. We only have one of them in our history. In Britain, where we got the tradition from, only has two. And they're a much older country than we are. So nobody really knows what's going to happen.
You know, it's interesting when you look at the legal precedent behind last convention. In some ways, in a mini cosm, you see that with the 14th Amendment, which in a way turned our entire republic on its head.
Yes.
And the manner in which it was deemed to have been ratified is highly questionable at best. And I think most likely, honest legal opinion of it is that it was not properly ratified.
Well, I think the same thing could be said for the 16th and the 17th.
Yeah, and I think that's exactly right. Especially the 17th, whereby, you know, the state under the Constitution had to be unanimous if they were going to give up representation, and that's not what happened.
Exactly. Barry, as always, once we get going on these things, when things start to get interesting, we are out of time. We would like to thank Robert Owens. Robert, is there a website or anything you'd like to give before we sign out?
Well, I'll tell you what, if you're in need of some great legal advice at hourly rate, OwensLawOffice.com is your best place to go.
That's fine. We love plugging for you, too.
Good Christian lawyer up in Delaware County. Thank you very much, Robert.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, stay with us tomorrow for our Saturday edition of Principles and Policies, where we're going to dig into a lot of other issues and, honestly, to discuss some more about why we need to be actively engaged once we know what the truth is.